Isn't it? I hope you were able to sustain your concentration as I was reading through it. Perhaps you know the story of Gideon already, you know a bit about him, perhaps you know the story. But that's the beginning of the events that are recorded for us. There's something written in James that says, faith without deeds is dead. Faith without deeds is dead. You expect, don't you, reasonably expect that if you put your trust in God, if you put your trust in Christ, it's going to change your life. And somebody says, I put my trust in God and there's no apparent change, you could find yourself asking that question, you know, have you really trusted? Where's the fruit? You'd expect there to be fruit. And I say that because one thing that we see in this chapter we've just read is a person whose life's been changed. Gideon's life is completely turned around, isn't it? You see him at the beginning of the passage. You see him at the end of the passage. His life has been transformed by the grace of God. Chapter 6, verse 1, the beginnings of this passage, they're people doing evil in the sight of the Lord. And there's a great sense that it's the whole of Israel. The whole nation has turned away from God. Nobody's interested. Nobody's concerned. Nobody's really taking much notice. But by the end of the passage, verse 34, for example, you see a complete change. There's Gideon standing up with a trumpet, blasting his trumpet with all his strength, letting people know this is the place to come. Come and trust God. Come and trust God with me. Let's fight the good fight. What a massive change as the Spirit of God begins to work in these people's lives. But here's the thing that really, really encourages me. Gideon is not a man of great faith. I don't know how strong you think your faith is, but this is not strong faith. It's not a story of strong faith. Otherwise, all the glory really goes to the faith of the person. This is a story of somebody who has a little bit of faith in a great God. A little bit of faith in a great God. I love the fact that Jesus said, if you've got faith the size of a mustard seed, you know, the smallest of all the seeds, faith the size of a mustard seed, you'll say to this mountain, be uprooted and cast into the sea, it will be done for you. How can such a thing be? Because it's not your faith that moves mountains, it's God that moves mountains. And it's who it is that you're trusting. And here's somebody who doesn't come to God with a huge amount of faith, but he comes to a God who is a great God. He doesn't really understand God at the beginning of this passage, does he? But by the end, his faith has really, really grown as he sees who this great God is and the proofs and the tests that he shows him. Gideon, he's not much, is he really? I love the way he talks about himself and his family. He's the least, isn't he? He's really not much to write home about. He's not a very important person. And yet he does great things. It looks on the outside, if you're looking at Gideon from the outside, you think, what a great man of God. What a great man this is. He really isn't a particularly great man at all, is he? But God uses him. And don't you encouraged by the fact that God will use all sorts of ordinary people, not much to write home about, but as they put their trust in a great God, he changes people's lives. Imagine that. Who'd have thought that in a little village in the Middle East somewhere, up in the hills, the son of a carpenter could become savior of the world? That's amazing to think about, isn't it? Son of a carpenter. But here we see something similar to this. This relatively unknown person, Gideon, being raised up by God. Oh Lord, raise up people for your glory today. Three things I want to try and get across. As God goes about changing lives and changing the world around us, he starts by changing people's hearts. I think that comes over very powerfully. That's where it all begins. God begins in the human heart. And secondly, what is the change that happens? He weans us off this thing of trusting ourselves, and he weans us on to trusting him. We learn to trust him over a period of time. And thirdly, it's this, that the change that comes is not a sudden overnight change. It's a change that comes gradually, by degrees. You know, one step at a time, we grow, we change, we're encouraged, and God magnifies himself through that. I don't know about you, when I look around, I see so much that I'd love to see change. Do you find things that you look around and you think, I'd love to see that change? And you might be praying and you might want to see a lot of change. I hate to see people oppressed. I hate to see people poor. People really who live out their whole lives without really having much of this world's goods. I hate to see the public and unapologetic profanity. I find it really difficult and offensive to deal with when you constantly be confronted, whether it's on the news or in the street, this kind of just normalization of bad language and bad attitude. It's really distasteful. I'd love to see a change. I hate to see families who are far from God living around here. So this is a lovely part of the world to live, and people have got their houses, they've got their homes, but you get conversations going so far from God. Whole communities, really, who know little of God and they're far from the Lord. I'd love to see something like that change. I'd love to see a great turning and a great changing in our land. But when God starts to do something like this, and the days that we're reading about in chapter 6, the land started to change. Everything started to change. But the way it all comes about, it comes by the beginning of changing people's hearts, changing somebody's heart. I see people living out their life. They work hard. They earn their money. And what's it all for? In the end, we all go the same way, don't we? What they've lived their whole life for? In the end, what have they got to show for it? They haven't got eternity. They haven't got fellowship with God. And they're living for vanity. What's that life all about? I'd love to see that change. Perhaps you're like me. And you listen to people, don't you, on the news or whatever, talking about what we need today. What do we need today? And they say the same old things, don't they? We change of government. People get very exercised about government and politics, don't they? We could change the government. That will make things a lot better. And we need to change the law about this and that. And people get very excited about that. And education. Tony Blair, wasn't it? Education, education, education. If we just educate people more, what a big difference that will make. But yet, really, we have very good government by all accords compared to the world standards. And our laws are broadly fairly just, and our education system is, you know, as far as the world goes, amongst the best in the world. Not saying there isn't room for improvement, but do you see the change? Do you see a real change to the things that we're talking about? I don't see those change. In chapter 6 in verse 1, we see a time of great public wickedness and evil, a real disregard for the things of God, publicly, openly, people living like that. And I think we see a lot of that in our own present day. We see the first 6 verses, this description that basically other forces, other powers have the dominion and the rule in the land. And I think sometimes I find myself feeling exasperated and wondering where this is all going. It just seems like those who have the power seem to be those who seem to be least sympathetic to the truth. I don't know why this is going about, but as you look in chapter 6 in these first few verses, you see this pathetic situation, don't you? And the people of God, Israel at that time, if you want to say they're the church, what are they? How's the church responding to the needs and the time? They're not doing anything, it seems. Chapter 6, verse 1. I don't know what you think the profile of the church is in this country. When you see church spokespeople on the radio or on the television or in the news, I don't know how often you think, oh, yes, finally somebody's saying it. Finally somebody's speaking the truth. Very often it seems so misleading. Sometimes it seems to be barely little representation of anything that I know or recognize as Christianity. And here we've got something quite similar, haven't we? We've got the people of God are really seemingly not walking with the Lord at all. A very, very low situation, isn't it? The government seems weak and ineffective. They can't deal with their own borders. They can't seem to manage their own way of life. There seems to be no respect between the different nations, between the Midianites and the Israelites and all the others. The economics have collapsed. Nobody has enough of what they need. There doesn't seem to be much equity. People seem to be, like Gideon seems to have hidden away his own things, and other people seem to be going without anything. There seems to be a lot of inequality in the land. And there's a lot of social insecurity. People are digging out for themselves caves in the mountains. They're so concerned about life that they're going into their bolt holes and they're hiding away. And what would you do? What does God do at a time like this? He doesn't go about saying, right, we're going to change the government, we're going to change the education, we're going to change the laws. He draws near to one person in particular and he changes their heart. He just changes one person's heart. It all starts there, doesn't it? God is very, very wise. He's not like us. The people here, they keep sowing and sowing and sowing. Have you noticed the way they sowed their seeds in those first few verses? Every time they sow their seeds, they're trying the same thing over and over and over again, and the same thing happens over and over again. The people come and they steal all the produce. Nothing changes. But when God sows the seed of the word into somebody's life, a real change starts. A real change comes for the nation. He starts this work in Gideon's life. In those first six verses, which begin with this terrible situation of evil in the land, by the time we get to verse 6, something begins to change. What kind of changes would you hope to see first? What kind of things are you looking for? This book tells us that the things we should start to be looking for is the change of heart. How do we know a change of heart has begun? We see it in there, verse 6. People start to pray. People start to pray. I mean, they really start to pray. That's where everything begins, actually, isn't it? How do you know that your heart has changed towards God? When you start talking to him, when you start coming to him, when you start to bring the situation before him, when people actually start to feel the pinch and run out of options and no longer can trust in themselves, when that's over, they've come to the end of themselves and they say, perhaps there's nowhere left to turn. Who can I turn to? And God is there, and they know that God is there, and they've been ignoring him and pushing him out for years, or the whole of their life perhaps. And then they turn and they start to pray. And that's what we see here. This gradual change begins when people start to pray. It's so encouraging, isn't it, when you still start to see people praying and committing themselves to prayer, real prayer, crying out to the Lord, not just, you know, expressing their kind of going through the motions, but crying out to the Lord, feeling the pinch, feeling the need. When you go to church, you know, you hear people praying the Lord's Prayer, don't you? And sometimes you hear the Lord's Prayer being prayed in a public place. And I'm not trying to, you know, pour cold water on anybody else, but sometimes I don't know what I'm listening to. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Do you know what I'm saying? There's a world of difference between somebody who's actually praying, talking to God. I want to see your kingdom come. I can't go. I don't want to see this anymore. I want to see change. I want to see change in my life. I want to see change in this world. I want to stop doing it my way. I want to start seeing it your way. I know the angels do it. Why can't I? Oh, Lord, just bring change. I'm hungry, Lord. I'm thirsty, Lord. A real passion, a real desire for God. You know, that's the burden of this book, I think, all the way through. There's this great desire to see the kingdom come. They really, when people really want to see the kingdom come, when people really pray, God really answers prayer. And he knows the difference, doesn't he? God knows when we're really praying. A change of heart towards God. And that's what he starts to bring, doesn't he? He starts to bring this change in people's hearts. That's where the change starts. And if you notice the way it's all structured in the first few verses of the book, who's pulling the strings? Who makes the situations that bring them to the end of themselves? Who's kind of corralling? We love to sing that, we're going to sing it at the end. The Lord is my shepherd. You've seen, you know, the shepherds with the sheep. He guides them down the ways that he wants to go. And you can see he's guiding his people and he's selling it. Oh, who shall I raise? I'll use the Midianites and I'll use the Amalekites and I'll pressure them this way and I'll pressure them that way and I'll get them to that point. I'll bring them to that point. Well, eventually they come to me. I'll bring them home to myself. God is working his purposes out, isn't he? And what's really crazy is the people, the way Gideon is speaking, he's very confused, isn't he? Why is the world like it is? Why is there so much evil? When he's talking to the angel of the Lord, he says, you know, why is it like this? He just doesn't know, does he? He doesn't understand why he's suffering the way he's suffering, why his people are suffering the way they are. Why are there so many problems in the world? And what's really crazy is that this man, Gideon, he's an Israelite. They've got the book of Deuteronomy in their own language. It's been written by their prophet just a few generations beforehand. And if you were to read the book of Deuteronomy in the last chapters of it, let's say chapter 28, There are, just turn with me to it for a second. There are so many things written in that book for everybody and anybody to read, to tell them exactly what God will do, to tell them exactly what's going on in their lives. Chapter 28, let's say from verse 33, for example. A nation that you have not known shall eat up the fruit of your ground and all your labors, and you shall be oppressed and crushed continually. Can you see? That's exactly what was going on in their land. And God had told them, this is what, if you disobey me, that's exactly what's going on. You could read on, let's say if you went down to verse 48, God had spoken to the book, and you shall serve your enemies, and your Lord will send against you in hunger and thirst, in nakedness, lacking everything. I'll put a yoke of iron on your neck. I mean, these things were prophesied and spoken about from time before. But here's the really good news. If you know that, you also know chapter 30, there's also this. And when all these things come upon you, the blessings and the curse which I've set before you, and you call them to mind, amongst the nations where the Lord your God has driven you, and you return to the Lord your God, you, your children, and obey his voice in all that I've commanded you to, with all of your hearts and with all of your soul, then the Lord your God will restore your fortunes and will have mercy on you, and he will gather you again, and so on and so forth. Can you see that it was already written, wasn't it? If they'd just known the book, they'd realize what they had to do to change. They had to come back to God. But that because they were walking away from him, they had forgotten these things. And so he had to bring these things back. And as soon as they've started to pray, what's the first thing that he does? Chapter 6, verse 7 there. The Lord sent them a prophet. Verse 8. They're such an ignorant people, but he's got them praying. He's changed their hearts, and now he's going to speak to their minds. You need somebody to speak to you, to explain to you what's going on. The prophet makes it very clear, doesn't he, what's been going on. You've sinned. That's what's happened. That's why this situation is the way it is. You've sinned. You've disobeyed the Lord. He's really referring them back to the things we read in Deuteronomy, haven't we? You need to trust him. You need to cry out to him. You need to repent. You need to turn in those verses 7 through to 10. So he captures their hearts, and then he starts to capture their minds. He starts to speak to them and explain what's going on. And clearly, as you listen to Gideon later on, even though they've been told by the prophet, he still doesn't really understand, but at least he's listening. At least he's hearing the word for the first time. Verse 11 through to 21 then. Have you noticed the way that it's quite hard to track and trace quite what's going on? First the prophet comes, then there's the angel of the Lord, then he disappears, and yet God continues to speak. It's like God is drawing these people closer and closer to himself. First he hears the prophet, then the angel of the Lord comes, and now this word is coming directly and personally to them. Gideon starts to hear God speaking right into his heart. He knows. How many of you have that situation where there's one thing going to church and hear somebody talking and you kind of pick up a bit of it and I didn't quite understand, and then suddenly, perhaps you've had the experience where suddenly it's like God is talking to me. There's like nobody else. I know the Lord is talking to me. And here they are. They've had that situation. Like Gideon knows that God is talking. I know God is talking to me now. God is coming close, isn't he? It all started with a change in his heart, and now God is continuing to minister to Gideon's heart. And the message becomes clearer and clearer. He has questions. You know, why is the world like this? Why? And do you know just the way that God just doesn't even answer his questions? He like completely ignores those questions and just tells him, no, look, this is what you've got to do. Let's not spend time trying to dot every I and cross it. We've got to bring a change. Life has to change. And off he goes, listening to the word of the Lord. And these tests, he asks God to prove himself to him time and time again. You'd think it's outrageous in a way, isn't it? Asking God to... But how patient is the Lord? And every time this comes, Gideon's faith increases. His confidence grows. Gradually, can you see? He's like taking him from changing his heart to hearing the word, to knowing the word is for him, to getting closer and closer to hearing God speaking to him. And then by the end, as he's directing him, his confidence is growing. By verse 22 to 25, he's just hearing God. It's not the messenger anymore, not the angel of the Lord even. He can hear God speaking to him. And God is putting a vision in his heart. He knows what he's got to do now. He knows where the change has got to come. He can see where God is pointing. Deep is speaking unto deep. That's an amazing experience, isn't it? When you hear God's voice. Have you heard God talking? Have you heard God talking to you? This is the experience that this man is relating, isn't it? This change of heart, and gradually he starts to hear the voice of God. I love the way, but by the end of that, chapter 25, the man, he's just worshiping. He's built an altar. He's become a worshiper. Once you start to hear God and the fear of God, oh my God, I've seen God. And the fear of God's coming on, that right fear of God has come upon him. And he builds an altar. He just wants to worship the Lord. He bows himself down. He just wants to worship God. What amazing change is coming over Gideon. The heart is changing, isn't it? And he's got this God-given dream now to change his family, the family that is so godless, isn't it? Imagine that, having it outside your house. Perhaps some of you have got an Asherah pole outside your house and an altar to Baal. He's growing up, and that's the atmosphere of his home. That's a very difficult place to grow up, isn't it? He's growing up in a very difficult place, but he can see what change needs to come now. And it's all through the eyes of his heart. God is just dealing with his heart. So, all the action, I'm not going to go through all of it. All the things that then happened, the blowing of the trumpet, the calling of the armies together, all of that great and glorious stuff all starts with just a changed heart. And if there's going to be change in our life, if things are going to happen in our families and in our communities and our societies, it's going to be first if God gets a hold of your heart. I mean, really gets a hold of your heart. Then the change will come. So that's really my first point. Before God's going to change the world, first, he has to change me. He has to change us, doesn't he? He has to get hold of our hearts. Because this is the thing, isn't it? And we see this in Gideon. We're so self-reliant. And we're taught that from our youth. We go to school. We get exams. We learn languages. We learn skills, maths and English and all the other things we learn. And we're taught to use these things. And of course, when there are problems, we try to use the skills we've got to solve the problems. And the fact is, look at verse 11 for a minute. Gideon is actually a pretty skillful guy. These are difficult times he's living in. You know, there are enemies here, there, and everywhere, and they're stealing everything. But he's got a plan. Gideon's a man with a plan, isn't he? He's found himself at a wine press. That's clever. Nobody's going to think of looking for grain in there. He's thrashing out the grain in the wine press. He's quite a clever chap, really. And when you look at the kind of gifts that he brings to the Lord, he's got a couple of bulls, he brings a stewed goat, and he's actually got quite a lot of food, hasn't he? In a time when there isn't much around, you can see Gideon is quite a clever chap, and he's got quite a lot for himself, all told. And given the truth of the times in which he's living, you'd say, well, actually, he's taking a fairly wise strategy for the times he's living in. He's living being pretty smart about things. In fact, he's a coward, no doubt about it, he's a coward, but he's a smart coward, isn't he? And in difficult times, probably that's the wisest natural strategy to adopt. Be a smart coward, avoid the trouble, and get on with your life. Look after number one. That's what he's doing. By the end of the passage, as he blows his trumpet and he's calling everybody to fight the Midianites, you think he's a bit of a bold fool, really. He becomes a fool for God. He's gone from a smart coward to a bold fool. And I think in the circumstances, most of us would agree, he's being pretty smart at the beginning of this passage. Because he knows who he is. Verse 15, he understands himself very well. How can I save Israel? What can I do? I can't do anything. I can't change the world. I'm the weakest in Manasseh. We've got a small group. We're a small family. We have nothing to offer the Lord. We cannot change the situation. People are like that, very philosophical, aren't they? What can I do? What change could I make? And you can understand that, can't you? He's actually quite wise. He understands himself. He understands his times. And the wisdom leads to this strategy. It's a very simple strategy. Hide. Hide. That's what you've got to do. Difficult times. Hide. And in verse 2, you can see this is not his own personal strategy. Everybody's hiding. They've built caves in the mountains and fortresses up there. Everybody's hiding. How many people do you think in their hiding knew their neighbors? How many people lock behind, close the door and shut the door closed? How many people are just keeping to themselves and, yes, I'm fine, thank you very much, and everything is behind closed doors? They're hiding, aren't they? They're keeping a low profile, keeping their heads down. Nobody's sticking their head above the parapet. Everybody's keeping a low profile. Everybody's hiding. And that is the smart thing to do in difficult times, if you're just relying on yourself. People just get on with their lives, don't they? And they think, well, I've made it through another day. I've got enough for myself. And on I go. Well, that's what people, I think, are doing today. They're hunkering down, aren't they? People are squirreling stuff away. They're weathering out the storms. They're riding things out. And to be honest with you, as God comes to speak to him, he keeps testing the Lord and asking for signs. It's like he's learned. He's so unwilling to take any steps. He won't take a step out. He's got no freedom. He's got no liberty. He can't just take it in. He can't just walk out. Every single thing has to be tested. His confidence is so low. He's just so used to living in such a small orbit, isn't he? But there's one missing factor from all of his calculations. It seems smart on paper, but there's one massive thing he's forgotten. It's there in verse 16. He's forgotten that God is with him. He's only little. And he's right, he understands he's only little. But he's forgotten, he's got so consumed with being little that he's forgotten this great big God who is right there with him and for him. And that's a big mistake. It's a big mistake to forget about God, isn't it? Out of your equations. He says, I will be with you. Yes, you're the one that's going to strike. You're going to live your life. But God says, I will be with you. Gideon's not got a lot to offer, truth be told. He hasn't got a lot to offer. Like the little boy who came with his loaves and his fishes. He didn't have an awful lot to offer. He was the weakest of his clans. But God was the one willing to provide the power. You just show up, I'll provide the power. Stop relying on yourself, start trusting me. I love the way that in verse 12 and 14, that it's quite striking how sarcastic God is. Have you ever heard God being sarcastic towards you? But the way he talks to him, he says to Gideon, man of valor, he calls him. Man of valor. Here's this guy hiding in a wine press, a coward hiding in a wine press, looking after number one. And he calls him man of valor. That's at least deeply ironic, isn't it? And later then in verse 14, he says, go in this might of yours to save Israel. Well, he hasn't got any. That's the whole point, isn't he? What are you going to do with this strength of yours? He's quite sarcastic, but only God can be simultaneously sarcastic and prophetic at the same time. Because this rather insignificant person with his very weak faith and little confidence and not much to offer is actually going to be a mighty man of valor. And he is going to do great things in God's strength. Now, you can't see it at that point, but God knows what's going to come. God can see the end from the beginning, can't he? Lost my page. Man of valor. And yes, that's right. This might of yours. But that's the point. God is not asking us to use our strength. He's not actually asking us to use our money and our energy and our wisdom. That's not actually what he's looking for. All he's looking for is for your heart. Give him your heart. That's all he's asking after. Just give him your heart. Trust him. And with that, he will do what he will do. The things that only God can do. And when you see Gideon blowing his trumpet, he looks courageous. And when you see somebody walking with God and doing great things in the name of the Lord, they look like they're something, but they're nothing. They're nothing. Anything that is anything, it's God that is to be glorified and praised. Israel has been lured into its caves, hasn't it? And God's people can so easily end up in our little caves, hidden away from the world, making it through, finding our way through. But we've got to come out of the caves. We've got to get out onto the open field. We'll look like fools. Gideon looks like a fool. But if God is with you, therein is the victory. There is the victory. Better be a bold fool than a smart coward. Than a smart coward. And that's my second real point. We've got to stop trusting ourselves. Stop doing a self audit. Let's look at God. Finally and briefly, you know, the change that happens in Gideon's life doesn't happen overnight. There are landmark moments, aren't there? There's that landmark moment we saw when the people started to pray for the first time. Do you remember the first time you prayed? Do you remember when you started to pray? You started to actually talk to God and believe that he was there, believe that he heard you. You started to pray. That's a landmark moment in somebody's life, isn't it, when that happens? And then later, when he cuts down the idols, there were things that in his life, they were big issues in his life, ordinary things, and he knew that they were wrong and they had to go. And one day he got up in the middle of the night and made the change. And perhaps you've had experiences, you've realized, I can't go on living like this. This is not right. This is wrong. And it's got to change. Those landmark moments, we thank the Lord for those. I love the fact that basically it looks like his dad came to the Lord. And some of us, we get very nervous, don't we, about the people around us. What will they think? What will they do? And here he was taking a step of faith, and God did a great thing in his life. His father came to the Lord. How amazing. When I read that passage, it looks like what's going to happen, that they say, bring out your son, and he's going to go, he's in the back bedroom. That's what it looks like, doesn't it? But he says, hang on, if this Baal is a real God, can't he look after himself? He's no God at all, it's clear. It's like suddenly he can see. This is what I should have been doing. My son is doing the things that I should be doing, and he gets stirred up. It's a wonderful thing when you see people coming to the Lord, isn't it? Especially in the members of your family. It's a wonderful thing. That day he stood up and blew the trumpet. The first time you blew the gospel trumpet in public. What's that like? It's a great moment, isn't it, to stand out on a street corner or stand up in a pulpit and proclaim Christ for the first time, calling people to repentance and to faith. These are landmark moments in his life. And there are also, the reality of Gideon's life is that he's still learning on the job all the time, isn't he? This thing about signs, if there are three signs he asks for in the course of this. Do you think after you've been a Christian a good number of years, you should still be looking for a sign? Should you be asking for a sign all the time? I don't think so. The word is enough, isn't it? When you come to know God and trust God, God says a thing, and that really is enough, isn't it? That's all we really need. Certainly, God is gracious and patient. He's so patient with Gideon, isn't he? Give me this sign, give me that sign, give me this sign. Coming up with amazing tests he comes up with. I don't know where he thought them all up. But we've got to grow out of these things. And Gideon has to grow out of these things. We have to grow in grace and faith and confidence in God and in his word. But having said this, has God given you a sign? Is there a sign that you've been given? My thought always goes to that passage where it says, no sign shall be given to this wicked generation but this, the sign of Jonah, 3 days in the belly of the whale, and so on and so forth. What's he speaking about? He's talking about his death, his burial, and resurrection. Do you want a sign? That is the sign. Will there ever be a greater one? Never. That's the sign. If you need a sign, that's where to look. If you lose confidence, look to Christ. Remember what he's done. Remember that Christ is risen and alive. That is the sign. So God is very gracious to us in providing a sign. But the truth is, we learn to just trust the word. Just do what God is calling you to do. I wonder if you'd ever have the temerity to ask God for a sign. If you've seen the cross, what more would you want from him? What more could he give you? I mean, he's given you his one and only son. What do you want now? What do you want next? Is there something else that he's withheld from you? Are you still not satisfied? Some people, if I want to see Jesus walk in the room, and only when I meet him will that, my friends, when that does happen, that will not be the day of the beginning of your faith. That will be a grim and miserable day for you, won't it? We've got to just trust in his word. So even though he takes these steps, he's also got an awful lot to learn too. And he's got to grow up, he's got to change, and he's got to grow up. I love the fact that Newton, who wrote Amazing Grace, one of the verses he used to preach on most often was about first the stalk, first the blade, then the stalk, then the full ear of grain. He was always saying, you know, that the people have these sudden events and sudden changes, the importance of remembering that there's an ongoing process at work. We're growing, we're learning, we're changing. Nobody here is the finished article. We're not the finished article. God is graciously working in our lives. As we turn to verse 12, just towards the end of what I have to say. Verse 12, the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, "The Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor." Just starting to believe that when God has said a thing to you, that it is true. Starting to believe who God says you are and starting to walk in it gradually, bit by bit. And Gideon is so dismissive when God says that to him. He's so bitter and dismissive when God speaks to him. And we can be like that, can't we? He's still got so much to learn. Just simple faith. Simple faith. So I find the story of Gideon so encouraging because he's not a great man and he's not got a great faith and he hasn't got it all together. But does God use him and do great things through him and by him? Yes, he does. It's a process, isn't it? Step by step, walking. And it's wonderful to see as well the many people that came to follow Gideon's example. Faith is quite infectious, isn't it? Faith is quite infectious. When you get around people who are full of faith, doesn't it encourage you and build you up? It sends you one way or the other, doesn't it? And as Gideon arises, his heart changes. As he starts to walk with the Lord, it has this effect on all these people around him. Let's be those people. Let's be those people who the Spirit of the Lord clothes us with might. So we may seem to be something. We know we're nothing, but we know God who is everything to us. Let's sing something to close, shall we? The Lord is my shepherd.